This is Women of Grace Live, discussing issues important to your life and faith. Spiritual insight, practical wisdom. Join us as we transform the world one woman at a time. Women of Grace, for such a time as this. Now, here's your host, Johnette Williams.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. So very happy to be with you today. I certainly am. My heart is filled with joy at the thought of spending these moments with you. We love to use these airwaves for the glory and honor of God, and we're singing His praises today. As you well know, a very monumental event happened last evening with the election. God is in His heavens, you know, and He is here with us, and He is bringing us His graces. May we live the blessing that we have received. May we live the mercy that we have received. And we certainly do want to hear from you this morning. It's a Wednesday morning, and you know that means it's a wacky Wednesday. Sue Brinkman is with us. We're going to talk about the not too appetizing kinds of things today. But all of that being said, your questions and comments are very important to us. This is the time that we afford for you to come and ask questions about the strange things that you see going on in your environment, in our culture today. We want to talk about that because we want to separate the good from the bad, the evil, right? The evil from the beautiful. And we certainly do want to separate truth, right? Truth from falsehood. And that's what we use this Wednesday for. It's a wacky Wednesday. Call in with what you see. Sue is the researcher and writer for our New Age blog that is out there at our website, womenofgrace.com is the way to access it. Or you can go directly there, newage.womenofgrace.com will take you directly to the blog. It's a searchable type of site. You can put in questions about any kind of specific topic that you have related to the weird and the wacky, and I can guarantee you, you're going to probably get more than one article on whatever your query might be. But we do invite you to use it. Use it frequently. Use it often. If you have a question, it's there for you 24/7. You can generally get your question answered right there at the Women of Grace New Age blog, available for you at womenofgrace.com. Sue also has a podcast. We have that podcast underneath our library right there at our website. It's called Grace Under Fire, exposing the darkness. Sue is always adding to that. I have it on very good authority, Sue's, that she has some new blogs that will be going up there, new podcasts that will be going up there. So we invite you to stay tuned for those. They could be there already. We'll find out as soon as we talk with her. Yesterday morning, I started off by sharing with you that, you know, I just found such consolation in morning prayer. I found such consolation in the psalm yesterday morning for morning prayer that starts off morning prayer in that Psalm 85, and then also in the Canticle of Isaiah that was the canticle for the day. And this morning, again, it's an interesting thing. The confidence was raised because it was talking about in the psalm how it was that God had delivered their people and had restored their fortunes, and I just felt as though that was an indication. And of course here, I don't know what the psalmist had in mind by fortunes. Maybe it was monetary fortunes. But for me, you know, the fortunes were less about money, not at all about money, although I know that the economy was a very big issue in this political campaign. But it was really more about the fortunes of blessing. You know, we talk about this often on Women of Grace. We talk about it, you know, both here on the air on radio as well as in our television program. And, you know, God is always in the posture of giving. It is His nature. We know that because St. John tells us that God is love. You've heard me give you this little syllogism in the past, but here it is again. It's important to remember, God is love. John Paul II, now saint, defines love for us, and he tells us that love is an act, not an emotion nor a passion, but it is an act. It's a very specific kind of act. What kind of an act is love? He tells us, love is an act of total self-donation. St. John writes in his epistle defining God for us, God is love. Then John Paul II gives us the definition for love. It is an act of total self-donation. So if you look at those two together, you realize that the only conclusion that you can come to is that God is always in the posture, right, of self-donation. He is always giving. Does He give to us just a weeny bit, a little bit, a teeny bit? Does he give to us, you know, what we deserve to receive? No, it says he's an act of total self-donation. So he's always giving all of himself to us. And the way in which that all of himself comes is by way of blessing and grace, right? So the blessing is always coming. The problem is that when we take ourselves outside of the will of God, when we begin to live a lifestyle that is sans God, that is opposed to his commandments, opposed to the teachings that he gives to us through his church, the church that Jesus Christ founded, the Catholic Church. When we do that, we remove ourselves through an act of the will by cooperating with the evil rather than the good. We, by an act of the will, take ourselves out of that spout where the glory pours out. We take ourselves out of the capacity to receive the blessings. And my fear, you know, for our nation has been that that's what we've done. We've done it through the ideology of a political system that promotes death, an anti-life agenda, you know, and we were headed for even more of that. We were headed toward reversals of corrections to what was never law, but I lack a better term. I could say practices, perhaps, that are death dealing, you know. And we were saying this, you know, and when you walk away from the fundamental reality of what God's will is, that our God is a God of life, not a God of death. And when we remove ourselves from that, not only are we out of the blessings, but we place ourselves on a trajectory that just continues to do what? It just continues to disintegrate. It leads to disintegration. And we were seeing that, weren't we? We've been seeing that in our culture. It's going from bad to worse to worse to worse to worse to worse. And then at some point, you hit the worst. And we were headed there. Some might even argue and say that we you know, already have experienced the worst. I sincerely hope so. We have an opportunity now because God wants to restore the fortunes of the land. And what are those fortunes? Those fortunes are his blessing, right? But we have to be in a position to receive those blessings. So I want to encourage you, you know, just as the nation seemed to set up a corrective path last night, if you are living in a lifestyle that is outside of the will of God as specified by sacred scripture, primarily in the Ten Commandments and the Beatitudes of our Lord, if you are living outside of the direction and guidance that comes to us through the church that Jesus Christ founded, which acts according to the Holy Spirit, then this is for you a moment. It's a moment for you to set a corrective path for yourself. And I want to encourage you to do that, because this is a new day in the Lord. The second alternative, the alternative hymn for morning prayer today: darkness has faded, night gives way to morning, sleep has refreshed us. Now we thank our Maker, singing his praises, lifting up to heaven hearts, minds, and voices. Alleluia. May it be so. On the other side of the break, Sue Brinkman, 833-288-EWTN. Well, you hear that music, and it's always the sound that you hear on Wednesdays. Wednesdays here on Women of Grace Live are wacky Wednesdays. We have Sue Brinkman with us. We talk about the weird and the wacky that we see happening in our day and time, the influx of weird and wacky ideas, ideologies, really, that promote ways of living that are very far different, not only different, but far removed from the revealed truth of sacred scripture and the teachings of the church. We don't want want you to be caught victim for that. So Sue comes on once a week. We talk about these weird and wacky things. You can always go to our website in between, you know, Wednesday to Wednesday, and look up by a topic that you're interested in. Look up that topic at our New Age blog, which Sue Brinkman researches and writes. It's out there at our website, womenofgrace.com, or go directly there, newage.womenofgrace.com, and you'll see the search feature. Put your query in, it'll come up. But immediately, you'll see the most recent blogs that Sue has written, and we're going to be talking about a couple of those this morning in just a moment. But first, I want to give you some numbers. 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986 is the way that you can join us here on Women of Grace Live, where we love to have that holy conversation with you. We certainly do. We want you to call us. Call us regularly and often. Don't delay. Call right away. We want to hear from you today. All of our lines are currently open. Matthew Gabensky is our call screener. If you're a first-time caller, we certainly want to know. I will ring my first-time caller bell for you, welcoming you for your debut here on the program. You can also text your message to us. You text the letters EWTN to 58177. Text EWTN to 58177. Wait for our response. Then put in your question, who you are, where you're calling from, how you're listening to us, and do know that message and data rates may apply if you text. You can use EWTN Radio's YouTube channel also to join us today. There's a chat feature there. Michael McCall will retrieve your question or comment. We'll get it up on the board and Sue and I can address it for you. You can also see us out there if you're at EWTN Radio's YouTube channel. I'm waving to you. I hope you see that. I'm waving. Always happy for you to be with us. So taking a look at what's going on. Of course, you know, yesterday was a momentous day. Last evening was a momentous evening. And into the wee hours of this morning, it was, you know, just a fascinating, fascinating, I think, exhilarating opportunity to give praise and thanksgiving to God for his mercy. So without further ado, here we go. Here is Sue. Hey, Sue.
Oh, how are you today on this bright, sunny morning? It's beautiful here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. It is a little overcast here in Birmingham, but that's okay. The good news is it's sunny in my heart. It's sunny in my heart
yes.
today.
Mine too. All of us up here in Pennsylvania. Well, a lot of us in Pennsylvania. Very, very happy on this bright, sunny morning that the Lord has seen fit to help us to come back to our godly roots.
Yes.
And to, like you were talking about in the intro today about, you know, encouraging people to choose a new path and get away from some of this darkness that's doing nothing but making us miserable, making ourselves or our families miserable. You know, get off that path and try to move towards the light. And I just think it's a very, very important advice, Johnette, especially at this time. It's a turning point for the country. It's a real turning point. You're going to see a whole different message now coming out of the government, I hope.
And I'm so glad. You know, recently I was at our Benedicta Institute Immersive up at St. Bernard's Abbey here in Coleman, Alabama, which is about, I don't know, it's about an hour and 5 minutes from where I live north. So it was up there and it was lovely. And Professor Dr. Donald Wallenfang was sharing with us about ideology. And he was saying that, you know, ideology is always about a political system. Now, you know, when we think political system, we naturally think political party, Republican, Democrat. But we have to think, I think, a little bit more broadly than that. And we have to understand that oftentimes an ideology is promoting a way of thinking that leads to decisions that will affect everything, including governance. And when we talk about the New Age movement and we talk about the occult and we talk about many of these false spiritualities, the way in which they have been marketed in our culture, the way in which they have been marketed to the public square, the way in which they've been marketed in the marketplace of ideas, you know, is all to promote something that is anti-God. All to promote something that puts man at the center of the universe rather than God. All of that promoting a way of thinking, a system of thinking that can lead to you know, a political regime, if you will, or a political moment in the history of a nation that has the capacity to enforce what it's been planting. And I think that's what we've been seeing, you know, for the past 4 years, probably far preceding that, because these things that we're talking about are not new things. But the fact of the matter is, what it does is it replaces man with God. And whenever we do that, we're not going to come up with any right conclusions on any topic or any policy. And we've watched how these ideologies have really affected us. And, you know, people, I think, are at this new moment. And I want to draw attention to the blog that you wrote yesterday and have you take us through it, Sue. You wrote this blog, What If? And you shared with me that, you know, these were the thoughts that were roaming around in your mind. And you thought, well, you know, I should really just write a blog on this and kind of get it out of my system. And so you did. And you did to our benefit. So I want to encourage you all to get out to our New Age blog there at womenofgrace.com, or access it directly, newage.womenofgrace.com, and read the blog. But Sue, take us through it. These were the, you know, musings of your mind yesterday that you were going through as, you know, people were making their way to voting booths all over the country.
Yeah, this is the way the devil works on me, on my head, and it's with the what ifs. Mm-hmm. The question, the what if this or that happens? What if this one wins or that one wins? What if violence breaks out when the winner's announced? What if the winner leads our country into ruin? What if, what if, what if? And I just remembered, you know, Father Philip Scott, our former spiritual advisor to Women of Grace, he taught us that what ifs, they come from the devil. Mm-hmm. He said, that's the devil's tactic. And he used to refer to him as Old Red Legs. He always called the devil Old Red Legs.
Yes.
But he said, you know, they're intended to stoke fear in you, to make you worry about the future, to keep your soul in a state of anxious churning so that you can't hear the subtle voice of God saying, calm down. I've got this, Sue. Everything's going to turn out. No matter what happens, I'm going to make it for you good if you just give me your fiat. You know, so I think for the most part, Satan's strategy is a very effective one. It works. It really works. But I think once you catch on to that, and see, once Father Philip Scott taught us that, I never forgot it. Yes. And every time I catch myself doing a what if, I say, hey, wait, don't go down that road, because you know what it is. But we have weapons at our disposal. And these are the weapons that I use when I come up against this. And it really does send them running for cover. The first one, of course, is grace. You want to ask him for the grace, God for the grace to silence those thoughts. Because by stoking anxious forethought in you and filling your head with doom and gloom about the future, what is the devil doing? He's preventing you from remaining in the present moment, so that you're now worried about the future. You're projecting yourself into the future. That's a crucial part of his strategy, because he knows that God, who is not subject to the confines of time, is always in the present. And wherever God is, there is his grace.
That's right.
And that grace is there for the taking in the moment, not in tomorrow or in yesterday. So when you feel fearful and anxious, you need to just cry out to God, who is present within you, and ask him for the grace to overcome your anxieties in that moment. And I think that, you know, and this is a favorite saying of mine from Father DeCassade, he who upholds us today will uphold us tomorrow with his invisible hand. He's gotten us through many a nasty political season before, and he's going to do it again. Yes. He'll do it again if that would have happened. The second weapon is use your faith. That's what it's there for. George Washington, he once said on that very, very hallowed grounds of Valley Forge, which is really about maybe 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now, he said, these are the times to try men's souls. When you're on the brink of something like we were yesterday, the brink of a very, very consequential election, these are the times when our faith sets us apart from those who have not yet embraced it. You saw people just churning and just all full of anxiety and despair and all that because of what was, you know, going to happen that day. But when we see God's hand in everything, whether we realize it or not, it does take the edge off things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes it a little bit easier, because you say, you know what? My God's in control of this, and he's such a good God. What am I afraid of? And I think from somewhere deep down inside, a strength comes, you know, that's really not really there during happier times. It's I called it in the article, an inner empowerment that makes even the worst case scenario somehow bearable. You don't even know how he's doing it, but he does it. and you feel his presence, and you're able to say and repeat, like what Job said, the Lord hath given, the Lord hath taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord. You're able to do that in spite of it all. And this is the realm of pure faith. It's not felt. It's not warm and cuddly. It's a choice. It's something you choose. I will believe this because I believe it's true. Even though I'm rattled to the core right now, I still believe this. And the last thing is trust. You've got to learn how to trust in this one simple truth. And Father DeCosade, I'm quoting from him now. He says, all that happens in this world, with sin the one exception, comes straight from God and the decrees of his will. Although it is certain that God never desires sin, or therefore the slanderous persecutions and injustices of every kind of which his elect are victims, he does, however, desire its consequences, because he can use them to our good. They can be our exercises in perfection and achieving perfection. But old red legs, he doesn't want you to believe that. That's why he, you know, Father warns us, and he says, everything antagonistic to God's will, which the devil implants in your mind, is an obvious illusion intended to rob you of God's peace, to make you sad, restless, perturbed, always discontented with your present state, always longing for another. That's a quote from him. And if you avoid that pitfall, you're going to spare yourselves all kinds of torments. You're going to reap great rewards from heaven. So in other words, you know, you got to trust him. You got to step out on a limb and just trust him. And if we don't do this perfectly, he said, you know, don't worry about that. If at one moment you fail and you fall, we rise the next. The fall is a weakness. The rising virtue.
Yeah.
So when God chooses celebration, you know, whether or not he would choose celebration or resignation for us today, I suggested that our very first response to the outcome is the one that I think is most pleasing to his ear. And that's what Our Lady gave us, fiat.
Yes.
Just say fiat. And you know, once I did that yesterday, I really was at peace.
Yeah.
I really was at peace. I was kind of chewing on my fingernails a little bit as the night wore on and the things were coming in. Of course, I live in very contentious Pennsylvania, and just waiting and waiting for Pennsylvania to be called. But there was just something, it took the edge off of things for me. And I kept away from the what-if thoughts and just thought to myself, he'll get me through it. He got me through other, you know, political seasons that were not to my liking. And he'll do it again.
Yeah.
He'll do it again.
Well,
kind of got me through it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, this is a great article. And I would encourage all of you to get out to our website, womenofgrace.com. You know, all of these articles are downloadable, right? You can actually print them out. And we invite you to do that. This is a great one to have on hand for when you are in a difficult situation, whether you're in a difficult situation corporately, you know, because of the way the world's going, or whether it's a situation that only you are confronting in your own personal world, right? This is a good thing to have. And it reminds me, you know, Sue, I love the fact that you start with grace, you know, realizing that, you know, God is always there. You know, he is in the present moment. He's got the grace for us in the present moment. We don't get the grace before we need the grace, but we do have to cooperate with it, and we do have to accept it, and we do have to move in it. And that's the choice that you're talking about. I mean, that's where faith and trust reside. Just like, you know, this whole business of love is an act. It's a decision that we make. It's a choice. Whether the emotions are there or not is not the issue. The issue is it's the choice. And if we choose to have faith, if we choose to trust, I mean, we're already receiving through the theological virtues the capacity for both of those things. So the capacity is there. It's there in its very nascent state. You know, the seed's been planted, but we have to water that seed, and we water that seed through decision. And I love that you say that, you know, you remind yourself, and it, you know, you remind yourself. Sometimes that fiat has to be given over and over again. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that fiat comes by way of just saying, Jesus, I trust in you. I trust in you, Lord. This is so uncomfortable. I really hate it, but I trust in you, Lord, because I believe that you're telling the truth when you say that you work all things to the good for those who are called according to your purposes, right? So I really like that. It, you know, the spiritual life and spiritual growth, what is it? It is a cooperation between the God who gives and the giver who receives. We have to receive. And that's what you're talking about. And I find sometimes too, when I'm really anxious, one of the ways in which I demonstrate fiat, you know, There's a, oh, you know, we talk about the gift of prophecy. There's also like prophetic actions, you know, prophetic actions that are expressing, you know, expressing through the gesture or the act itself, our commitment. So the way in which I sometimes exercise fiat in those moments when I'm severely troubled is just to go into praise. I praise you, Lord. I thank you, Lord. I do, you know, with that first stanza of the alternative psalm, for morning prayer today says, you know, it says, sleep has refreshed us. Now we thank our maker, singing his praises, lifting up to heaven hearts, minds, and voices, you know. So we lift up our voice to the Lord and we give fiat to that which we say we believe. We act on the belief in some demonstrative way, you know, yes. We demonstrate it. Yes. Spiritual life is so exciting. I just love it so much.
I do too. It's a challenge. It's always an adventure.
It is.
It's just an adventure about how you learn so much about yourself through the eyes of God when you're trying to follow Him. He shows you so much about yourself. And I like what you were saying, that word cooperation. I just wrote that down on my notepad here because that is so true, that when you are in situations like that that are stressful and anxious, I will often just say to Him, Lord, give me the grace to cooperate with you right now.
Yes, that's right. Because that is a grace.
Give me the grace to cooperate with you because I don't think I'm cooperating. I want to go down this long slide into darkness, but, you know, please help me to cooperate with you. And He does.
Our God is so good to us. And we want to hear from you today. It is Wacky Wednesday. As you know, Sue is here. You've been hearing from her today already. Now it's your turn. We do want to hear. 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. That's the way that you can join us toll free here in North America. We also want to remind you that EWTN Radio's YouTube channel is available for you too. Put in your question or comment there in the chat feature or text it to us. Text the letters EWTN to 58177. Wait for our response. Put your question, comment there, and know that message and data rates may apply. We're going to be right back with you. We're going to be talking about blood jewelry. Yuck. Ugh. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Join in on the conversation. The Women of Grace phone lines are open. 1-833-288-EWTN. 1-833-288-3986.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We are so happy to be with you today. Yes, we are. Always eager to hear from you here. It's Wednesday. That means it's Wacky Wednesday. Sue Brinkman is with us. We talk about the weird and the wacky that we see going on in our world today. And boy, oh boy, we don't ever lack for things to talk about. All of that being said, we do it for one purpose. We do not want for you to fall victim. We don't want you to fall victim to the hype. We don't want you to fall victim to the marketing schemes. We don't want you to fall victim to the social pressure that you might experience from friends. We want for you to stand strong. And we want you to know the truth. You know, we want you to know the truth. We want you to be able to discern for yourself if this is good or if this is bad. You know, there are telltale signs always that accompany these things. It's an interesting reality about the devil. He's so proud. First, he wants to just, you know, deceive us completely. But then he's so proud, he can't hide himself. He can't bring himself to hide himself. And so, you know, the malevolence of it and the viciousness of it begins to eke out. It begins to eke out. And we want you to see the eking out so that you can understand what it's rooted in. So to that end, we receive your calls about anything that you see going on that you would like clarification about. Let me give you the toll-free number for you right here in North America. It's 833-288-EWTN. Woohoo! 833-288-2986. That is the way that you can join us live here on Women of Grace Live, where we love to have that holy conversation with you. Did I give you the right number? Sometimes I have to check myself. No, I didn't. See? That's why I checked. 833-288-3986. Golly gee whizzikers. One digit off there. 833-288-EWTN is the easiest way to remember it. How about that? So we invite you to give us a call here. I only have said those numbers. I don't know how. If I ever tallied them up, I'm sure that it would be in the hundreds of thousands. Maybe even has approached a million at this point. Who knows? But also available, that's a toll-free number for you here in North America. Outside of North America, your number, country code 1-205 1-205-271-2985. That's country code 1-205-271-2985. That's where I got the 2-9. See, it shows up every here and there. I botched those up, but that's okay. I just gave it to you right. So use those numbers. Also available for you out there at EWTN Radio's YouTube channel. Michael McCall will retrieve your questions or comments, put them up on the board for us, and we'll be able to address them. Matthew Gubensky is answering your calls at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. And he will get your information up there, and we'll be able to talk with you live here. If you're a first-time caller, first-time submitter, you know we want to know, because I like to ring my bell to welcome you for your debut right here on Women of Grace Live. Sue Brinkman with us, as I mentioned to you. We were talking about the election. We were talking about the wily tactics of the evil one. And what is our weaponry against those wily tactics? Sue identified three things for us. She talked about grace. She talked about faith. She talked about trust. All of those are missing, you know, when we walk outside of the will of God. We are not able to exercise those to the full, and we often need to exercise them to the full. But Sue, you know, you've got another blog up there. We talked about the first one that's related to the grace and the faith and the trust in God. But this particular article is about a macabre fashion trend, and it's called blood jewelry. I mean, this is so outrageously disgusting. But, you know, people, they fall for what the gimmick is. They fall for the lie that's being packaged up in tinsely wrappings with big bows on it.
Exactly what they do. And this actually came from a fan of Wacky Wednesday, and they asked about this. About jewelry that contains the blood of a loved one. What is this all about, they asked. And now this question, I think, came in via our email. They didn't actually call in. It was from email. So if you do have a question, for some reason you don't want to call in, you can email us, and we will handle that question and bring it out on the air and try to answer it for you. So use that as an option in the future if you'd like. But anyway, she wanted to know, well, what is this all about? I mean, jewelry that contains their blood, is it really their blood? And the answer is yes, it's really their blood. And this started back in the 1990s with Angelina Jolie and her then husband Billy Bob Thornton. They created blood necklaces for each other, and they kind of made a big splash out there media wise. She purchased these clear lockets, and she thought it would be romantic if they took a little razor blade, sliced their finger open, and then smeared a little blood of one another's blood on these lockets, and then wear it around their neck, you know, just like you would wear your son's or your daughter's baby hair. So, but the press got wind of it, and as Billy Bob Thornton said, they acted like they were walking around with a bucket of blood around their necks, and they kind of blew it out of proportion, but it stuck. This blood jewelry stuck. People began to say, yeah, that is a kind of good idea. So now you have all kinds of blood jewelry merchants. I was shocked at all the merchants out there who sell this stuff. They sell pendants, bracelets, pins, rings, all of which you can fill with the blood of your loved one. One jewelry provider named Remain Eternal, that's the name of the company, says, blood is the essence of life. We swear blood oaths to symbolize deeply held commitments or become blood brothers, to represent a bond that can never be broken. When you carry the blood of a loved one with you, it represents a magical bond between two souls. Well, we really don't want to get into that kind of thing, any kind of magical bond between souls. This is not something you want to do. Another blood jewelry merchant refers to their product as blood inclusion jewelry. And they liken it to the trend to maidens of old giving knights a lock of hair woven into a bracelet to ride off into battle with. But this is a little bit more, you know, bizarre, is giving them your actual blood, which I think is strange. But as I'm researching this and looking into these different providers, there's breast milk rings, pendants and charms, umbilical cord jewelry, as one baby's cords are full of blood, and although I usually include the whole piece of cord, I can just grind the blood if you prefer. This piece contains entire umbilical cord. I thought, why would you want that? It's a baby's breast. Especially that they put in there, which we have to be very careful of, is cremation ashes. People want to put jewelry too. And you know, the church has given a a statement about that. You cannot wear the ashes of your loved ones in jewelry. You shouldn't in your home. These are supposed to be buried in sacred place. You're not supposed to be doing that. The conservation of the ashes of the departed in the domestic residence is not permitted, and they may not be divided up among various family members. And this is from a document. We do have a blog up there. Just look under ashes, and it'll give you this new instruction that came out, I think it was in 2016, from the Doctrine of the Faith. You can't do that, and you cannot preserve it in mementos, pieces of jewelry, or other objects. They specifically tell you, no, you can't do that. The church prefers the practice of burying the bodies and the ashes of the deceased because they say this shows a greater esteem toward the deceased and properly reflects our belief in the resurrection of Christ, which is the culminating truth of the Christian faith. So we want to respect our bodies and bury them in a sacred place, not wear them around our necks, not divide them up among relatives. People do that. They give, oh, here's a little bag of, you know, mom's ashes. No, you don't do things like that. Your mother's body, we believe that the body is an integral part of the human person. And that's, in fact, what the church says. It says, by burying the bodies of faithful, the church confirms her faith in the resurrection of the body and intends to show the great dignity of the human body as an integral part of the human person whose body forms part of their identity. So why would you be hacking up mom like that by giving a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there? It's just not the right thing to do. But this kind of jewelry is, and I would think it's a given that people are going to get the idea. Well, instead of doing blood, why don't I just do some ashes here? But I'm not sure about the breast milk stuff. I can see tiny pieces of hair. People do that. That's a very long-standing tradition to have a locket with someone's hair in it. But that's not blood. And so this is one of the things that people have written in, and I had never heard of it before, and I was just shocked when I went to research it. This is why I love my job. I get to go out there and read this stuff, and I think, wow, this is for real. It was very interesting, the kind of stuff that they will put into a locket and call it a magical connection between souls. I don't think I'd get involved in it.
No, absolutely not. I don't think that there's anything that is yeah, there's nothing that's aesthetically pleasing about it in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I understand the sentiment of heart that people might have, but there's other ways to express that sentiment of heart. And, you know, I think it's very important to, I want to emphasize a little bit what you said about the church's position on cremation, because cremation has become, you know, a very ordinary way putting to rest a loved one who has passed on, right? You know, it's become something that is viewed to be, in some cases, even more acceptable than burying the person. And usually there are financial reasons involved with that. The church doesn't say you cannot cremate. She does not say that. But she does say that the preferred way, the preference, you know, your first choice is to bury the individual's body intact. But even if you determine cremation, as you said, you know, the cremains are to be buried or to be placed in a columbarium or something of that nature. It is, you know, grandma is not supposed to sit, or mom or dad is not supposed to sit in an urn on your mantle. That is not right. You wouldn't do that if the body were intact. I mean, you know, so you treat the cremains exactly as you treat the body, because that is what it is. So all of that being said, I think it's really important to consider how we view these things. And you know, I am of a mind, Sue, you know, that you know, Holy Mother Church gives us the guidance and the teaching that we need for our benefit. You know, it's for our benefit. It's for our eternal benefit. It's for the capacity to receive the graces that God bestows upon us. So when, you know, in these very important matters, for me, that's the first thing I consult the catechism. What does the church say about this? So I just want to encourage everybody, if you don't have a catechism, get out there to EWTN's religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, and get a copy. I mean, we have them at our website too. Your book, Learn to Discern, the New Age Compendium, Is It Christian or New Age? Very important book. You know, this book is a very, very important book. As a matter of fact, I was tickled because you told me that the Monsignor that I'm going to be interviewing tomorrow in studio at EWTN, his shows will be airing in the not too distant future, Monsignor Bransfield, gave you the imprimatur on the compendium. Am I right?
Yes, he was the censor liborum. He was the censor. He was the one who read the book to make sure that it was all in keeping with church teaching. Yes.
Yeah, so that's a wonderful thing.
I was very... I was, because, you know, I have a lot of faith in him. He's such a wonderful theologian, that he went through it, that there was nothing wrong with it. It's a big burden on a writer. And, you know, that being a writer, especially on matters of the church, that you don't want to lead anybody astray. And
no,
you want
don't.
To misrepresent these great and beautiful teachings of our Lord in the church. And it's easy to do it. And you don't even sometimes know that you are. And so he read the entire thing. And it's a big book. That's
it
a compendium.
Is.
There's about 300 or 400 pages in that book. And he read it. It took a long time. It took maybe, I think, 2 months to get that. But yeah, I was very I was very heartened when I got the letter from him saying it's okay.
Yeah.
The book is fine. So,
well, you know, he himself is an author. He's written a number of books. And the book that I'm going to be interviewing him on tomorrow is Angels, Our Guardians in Spiritual Battle. And EWTN's religious catalog has that book. I really, really urge all of you to get a copy of it. You too, Sue. I'll get you a copy, Sue, and get it out to you. I'll just get it out to you because it's a great, great book. You know, I think it really explains to us about the angels as our guardian and protectors, but then also about the fallen angels that go by the name demon. 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. It's the way that you can join us live here. Toll free if you're in North America. If you're a first-time caller, want to know, so I can ring my bell to welcome you for your debut. We're taking your submissions as well from EWTN Radio's YouTube channel. Use the chat feature there to put in your question or comment. Michael McCall will retrieve it. Matthew Gabensky will answer your calls. Rich Jesse keeping it all together in the studio there for us. Our producer making it happen through the airwaves is Sue Brinkman with us today on this Wacky Wednesday, talking about the weird and the wacky. We've got Alan with us. He is in Charleston, South Carolina, and he is listening to us via Catholic radio in South Carolina. And so happy, Alan, you're with us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joanna.
How are you?
Great. My wife and I saw you down at Ave Maria University a couple of years ago. That was fun.
Thank you very much.
My question is, I agree with the Catholic Church's view on burying the body completely intact. And I'm not a fan of cremation. I understand the circumstances and all that. And that the cremated remains will be buried together or put in a common burial. My confusion is that our church has first-class relics from the saints, pieces of the body not buried with the saints. And those are sacred items, relics, and we have second class and third class, but the confusion is the difference between burying the full body or the cremation versus here we are having relics, first class relics in little pieces of sacramental jewelry, I guess you could call it, as well as on the altar for where we sacrifice, have the sacrifice of the Mass. So that's a bit confusing.
Well, Alan, I want to thank you for your question because you know what? That is the question I think that a lot of people would have. So, Sue, what is the difference between keeping, the ashes of a deceased loved one or, God forbid, a relic in another form from a deceased loved one's and the relics of the church?
Well, relics, first of all, they're parts of the body that are really kept for religious meaning. That's what a relic is. It's part of the body of a saint, whereas ashes are the remains of a person after cremation. Ashes are just simply the remains of that person. So the Catholic Church the cremated ashes, say, of a saint, that's considered to be a relic, not just an ordinary person. It has to be a person of a saint, a person who is worthy of the veneration of the church and has some historical significance. Relics were extremely important in the early church. They were revered. There's so many people were killed in the beginning of our church's history, and the remains of those bodies, they would use that. They would hold these relics and just venerate them. They were so devoted to them. They would plead with them for strength. It really, really was a source of great comfort to them. But ashes are a completely different thing. Ashes are simply the remains of a deceased person. They're not the remains of a saint. And it would have to be that way. It would have to be the remains of a saint, of a piece of their body. That's what it would be. So that's my difference. I think it's a great question, though. I bet you a lot of people think that way. Well, what if my mom, was a saint? Well, we're talking about people who are declared a saint by the church. And that's considered to be, their remains are considered to be relics.
Yeah. There's there's an article out there that I'll refer you to, and it's written by our Sunday visitor, and you can get out there. The question is, why is it okay to distribute relics and not a loved one's remains? And, here is the answer, basically, that's given for that. It says, the context of the two scenarios is quite different. The church's directive is that the cremated remains of an individual are not to be separated, but are to be buried together in one place or placed in a mausoleum. This shows reverence for the body. Cremains are not ashes. They are what remains of the body after cremation. Such directives are all the more important because many strange practices have been taken up since cremation has become more common. Some families, as you mentioned, like to divide the remains and send portions to various family members. Some families have taken to scattering the remains in the woods or in the ocean. Strangest of all, some actually have the cremains made into some sort of jewelry. And so it says, I'm reading the article, what is wrong with dividing the cremains? Well, consider the remains or what remains of the body. We would not think of having an arm removed and sent to one family member, a leg sent somewhere else, and so forth. The church asks us to consider cremains in the same way. If cremains are buried, all the cremains should be buried together. They should also be placed in some sort of container that keeps them intact as the cremains are placed in the ground. Scattering cremains out in the open makes it likely that they will be trampled underfoot by animals or even ingested as food. All of this takes away from the reverence that is due the human body. I can remember, Sue, as a child, I'll finish this article in just a second, getting to the relics now. But I can remember as a child, maybe you remember this too, that when my parents used to take us to the cemetery to pray for our deceased loved ones, and that's a practice that we should try to keep intact. We were not even permitted, my parents would tell me, no, you cannot step on the grave. No, you have to walk between the two graves or behind the headstones. You cannot, don't step on the grave, because it was considered, it's a place of rest. It was considered disrespectful to even step on the grave. So that shows the reverence that the church has for the body. But here, to finish it up, it says veneration of relics. The key difference is veneration. Another main difference is that a canonized saint is involved. Since death came to a man as punishment for original sin, the bodies of the dead, while deserving respect, are not an object for veneration. But when a saint is canonized, the church, based on evidence, tells us that they now reign with Christ. Hence, small relics of their bodies become a source of blessing and a sign of triumph. And remember also, too, and this is helpful, that points out the difference as well, in that the church, Alan, is very cautious about who receives relics, because a lot of relics, first-class relics, were ending up in pawn shops. People died. Their loved ones that survived them didn't know what these things were. They took them to pawn shops, and they were being sold. We don't sell relics. They're given. And now currently they're really primarily entrusted only to religious and to priests. Does that help you, Alan?
It's just that, now with that knowledge, if we bury somebody, whether it's in body intact or ashes, what if they do become a saint? Then are they, the church, would they exhume, like, let's say Fulton Sheen, was he buried intact? I don't know.
Yeah, they do that.
That's what they do. They do that.
Bones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah, that's what they do, Alan. And remember, I mean, once a person has gone through the canonization process, that person's body really belongs to the church more than the family, wouldn't you say, Sue?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you hear that music. Here we are, we're at the end. And I am so, so sorry, Eric, we can't get to you. But I'm hoping that the answer that we gave to Alan helps you with your question. But you can call in tomorrow. Holy Family Radio, blood jewelry versus relics is Eric's question there. First time caller. Still going to ring my bell for you, Eric, because you did call in. Sue, it's been great. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, talk to you soon. God bless. Bye-bye.